Okay.
So here we are, class 4 of session 7, working with time of knowledge in knowledge of time and space, working our way through the whole time section, which will also take us through session 8. And I must say, it's been very helpful to me to work our way through this. I think I can focus in on what seems to me to be the key point here about time, which is part of what we will try to explore today and in the sessions that remain. And in fact, we've been exploring it, but it becomes increasingly clear to me. So let me say a little bit about that, kind of reviewing where we were last week, and then that will lead us into a practice where we will just go directly into this question of the dynamic of time. And then when we've had a chance to discuss that, then the remaining step will be to go through some of the very interesting material in the reading for today. And we'll see how far we get with that. So if you look back at the end of last week's reading, on pages 46 and 47, a point gets made there that's actually been made a number of times throughout the reading that we've had so far, and that is that the world that we inhabit, the temporal order is one of the ways that it gets talked about here, and the logos is another way that it gets talked about here. Let's call it the temporal order for now. So the order that we inhabit is sponsored by time. Or another way to say that, and Rinpoche does use the word sponsor. He says time sponsors experience. But another way to say that is that the order is a temporal order, and the world that we live in, which you can look at in space terms, and of course we've spent a lot of time doing that in the past, but now we're looking at it in time terms. You say the world that we live in as a temporal order is a manifestation of time. So when we look at the world around us, and within us, and the world of which we are a part, those are all spatial terms that aren't so appropriate here. When we just inhabit the world, everything that we engage, everything that we encounter, and everything that we experience, those are all manifestations of time. And a good place where that's described, again, going back to last week's reading for a moment, is on page 43. There's a couple of places where Rinpoche talks about that. Let's see if I can find it here. Let's see, maybe it's 42 actually. He basically talks about time being played out. I'm sorry, I don't find the exact place right now. Played out into a world of positions. That's the phrase that I really liked, because I think it really captures some of that. So the sense here is that our world is established, and the temporal dynamic which does that establishing, and which we can discover really in every verb, you could say, right? Because verbs are about time. But we've talked especially about the idea of specification and determination. Those are a couple of the words that Rinpoche uses here. When we find ourselves in a world, it's a world that is the playing out of time's dynamic and kind of freezing them, you could say, into a world of positions. So, I don't see that quote on 43, but let's go back to 46 for a second, and look at the bottom of very bottom of page 46, or the last full paragraph, and then from there on. It says, we make an agreement, and the agreement is the order, really. And then he says, based on this agreement, we assign names and we post them like signs that identify what's experienced. So we have this world and everything has been identified with its label, right? Completely, specifically, and distinctively, we assign meaning. And you could spend a long time, I think, I'm not going to do it right now, you could spend a long time just thinking about those three adverbs, completely, specifically, distinctively. They all suggest something a little different, but the basic idea is that the whole of what we encounter and inhabit, right, that's all been marked out by time. We respond, I'm reading a little further down, we respond to what's recorded. Having set up a rational order, we make points and connect them, marking out the motions of the specific. So that's a phrase, again, that is just very rich with meaning. Rinpoche is so careful about the language. So what gets specified, the specific, right, is actually a movement, the act of specification, but it gets marked out into these very precise and distinct presentations. And it goes on page the bottom of 46, in this unquestioned interplay, the dynamic of time is closely at work. It would take too long, I think, to work through all this, but it'd be good to go back and really look carefully at this material. But he says at the top of 47 now, marked out points embody, while the movement that makes something of those points, so the meaning giving, that finds expression as lower level knowledge. So what's happened here, and some of the consequences are expressed there in the next paragraph on 47, but again, I'm not going to go there. What's happened here is that the temporal order freezes the dynamic of time. It gives us a particular reality. And the dynamic is available within that reality. And our job, if you want to think about it that way, or let's say the practice that could really help transform our lives, the vision that could make our reality different from what it is a vision in which everything that's frozen in that way unfreezes, and we regain access to the dynamic of time. So that's exactly what doesn't happen at the very end of 47, he says, we cut off from the energy that might make transformation possible. We go with what can be. What happens is that everything becomes static and frozen, but in fact, it's always just the manifestation of time. That's what the temporal order is. So everything here is being redescribed. I think that's what Rinpoche is doing here, and it's quite remarkable. He's redescribing our world in as without changing the world. I mean, without saying we have to go somewhere else. Everything that manifests has this dynamic available within it. So I think a very nice analogy. I think I mentioned this a couple of sessions ago. It's only an analogy. It's not the same thing, but it's still a good analogy. Is the very famous formulation, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. Now you say, well, energy and mass are interchangeable. And in the same way, the temporal order, the frozen order of things and structures and identities in which we find ourselves, that's interchangeable with the dynamic of time. But we need to activate the vision that lets us make that transformation, that lets us transform the frozen temporal order into the dynamic of time. That's what we're being invited to do. The time is available. It hasn't gone anywhere. But we look for it in the wrong place, because we look for it in terms of the temporal order. We look for it in terms of past, present, and future, linear temporality. But that's just a part of the temporal order. And the whole, you know, this happened and that happened, causality. And those of you who have read around in the TSK books know that Rinpoche is always pointing toward how we rely on these structures where we say from and to and good and bad and past and future and all of these different distinctions. But those distinctions, and that includes the temporal distinctions, past, present, future, those are all manifestations of the order. And there isn't really a way to gain access to time, let's say, through the temporal order. When we look in the temporal order, we're looking in the wrong place. So Michael has a comment or question about that. He says, given that we don't need to live in a world of frozen artifacts, given that we don't need to live in a world of frozen artifacts, might it also be true that we cannot experience the dynamic of time except through its presentations? Perhaps similar to the fathoming of vision through our efforts to embody it. In other words, can we unfreeze positions while still relying on time appearing in a realm that we inhabit as living beings? And I think the answer is yes. That is exactly what Rinpoche is pointing towards. We don't need to, we don't need to transform linear time. We don't need to transform the temporal order that we rely on. We just need to recognize that that order actually has very little to do. You could talk about it as lower level time, perhaps, but it has very little to do with the dynamic of time. We keep trying to think of that as the dynamic of time. And you know, we keep finding, I mean, it's not so hard to find instances of the dynamic of time. We've talked about that before. Just anything, anywhere we find movement, there's already a kind of connection to the dynamic. But we try to make sense of that in terms of these frozen positions. That's what we want to be looking at, that change. So Rinpoche points towards that. I guess again, it's still on on page 47. And again, it's just a passing remark. You know, so it's very helpful to study this. And later today, we may take a little look at you know, what Rinpoche says about language. And of course, when he writes about language, it's always very interesting to think about it in terms of the language of the TSK books. So they offer something very special, but one needs to look at what's being said with a great deal of patience. It's not that you have to have penetrating insights, but you need to really take seriously what's being said. So just about eight lines from the bottom of 47, Rinpoche says, the momentum of what is controls our responses. Now that's linear time. And linear time has its own momentum. And much earlier in this whole course, we talked about how the momentum of linear time is completely interconnected with the force of the self's desires. I'm quoting from Love of Knowledge right now. But that momentum is activated. He says, the momentum of what is controls our responses, yet its dynamic passes us by. So when we think in terms of past and present and future, there is a little bit of an echo coming from somewhere, but not too bad. When we think in terms of past and present and future and the momentum that carries that, it's just so natural to think that that's what time is. And he's saying here, that the momentum is not the dynamic, right? The momentum controls our responses, yet its dynamic passes us by. So what happens as a result is that we're cut off from the dynamic. We're cut off from the energy, as he says here, that might make transformation possible. So there's something really fundamental there, and you could compare it to space and the way we've looked at space in the past, because we tend to think that we're in touch with space when we're in touch with nothing at all, or we're in touch with the distance that separates us from whatever it is we're interested in, you know, the gap between the subject and the opposite object. There's distance, there's separation, there's nothing at all. Those are kind of space words, in the same way you might say that past and present and future and causality and from and to, those are the kinds of categories that are related to time. In both cases, we're not really in touch with time or space at all. You know, space is the fullness of appearance, and time is the dynamic of appearance. So Sudhi says his analogy, this is right at the end of the reading for this week, his analogy of that momentum being like an airplane moving versus being in it, in other words, being in the dynamic of time, is very helpful. Yes, yes, I think it's a great, just a great summary image. You know, there's the onrushing momentum of time, which we have to just get out of the way of or be crushed, you could say. That's not quite the airplane image. But or there's just being in the dynamic, being in the flow. I think we can use the word flow, the flow of time. Okay, so what do we do? This is the image, and they wanted to take a little time to lay it out. But what do we do about it? And this will lead us then into the practice. So we've already talked about this, and this is kind of a summary or review. One possibility for reconnecting with the dynamic of time, we actually went into this quite a bit last week, so I'm just going to go into it again very quickly, and that will lead into the practice. So one possibility is just to find the actual arising in each moment. Another possibility is to engage the places in our experience where we touch the aliveness of time. So, you know, the anything again, like a howling wind or a rushing river or just the incredible rapidity of the movement of the mind. Those are all places where you can touch the dynamic of time. Those are possibilities we've explored in the past, not so much now. Another way, and this relates to the exercises we've been doing last week and this week, is to thaw out, you could say, although maybe that's too general, is to, let's say, slow down for now. It's to slow down the momentum, because when you know the momentum just takes us past what's happening. There's a place later in the reading for this week where Rinpoche says the self is always behind time. Right? It's always caught up in this momentum and it misses what's going on. So you could slow that momentum down, and you can do that through meditative practices that turn us away from our tendency to always reinforce and reestablish the patterns and structures of time by labeling and so on. And instead, tuning in to the directness of experience. So marriage of sound and breath and the dynamics exercise. The dynamics exercise, is it 9 or 11? I forget right now. But 9, I think, commanding time. You know, very literally, there's that diagram where you normally you've got this jagged point of time, and instead you let it open up. You release the tension, and then you can settle into time. So that would be a way to do it by deactivating the ordinary momentum of linear time. So we have, in fact, been experimenting or working with that. Another way to do it, and we talked about this a little too, is you could go right into the energy of whatever is going on. So the example I gave, I think, as an assignment a couple of weeks ago was to work with an emotional response, right? And instead of getting caught up in the emotion, the content of the emotion, there's just the energy of the emotion. And if you can go right into that, that is the dynamic of time. So those were related ways of doing it in many ways, but these are all different possibilities that we actually have looked at. The one that I already worked with a little last week and want to have us look at now or do as a practice is to find within the moment of experience. So it could be an emotion, and that was the example I gave as an assignment, but right now we'll just do it more generally, to see what's going on in this moment and see it as a kind of a summation of the whole temporal order. So this may sound a little abstract, but I want us to try it and see how it goes. In other words, whatever is going on in our experience right now, whatever we find ourselves doing, grows out of the temporal order. And if we see it as embodying the whole order, then the possibility is there of activating that order. One way to think about this is the phrase which Rinpoche uses in the reading for this week, and he also uses it in Love of Knowledge. The phrase, to know with the knowing of the Logos. So the Logos is the temporal order. For our purposes right now, it's fine to say that. And what we're asking, what we're doing, is letting the immediate experience engage the whole of the temporal order. So if we can do that, then the dynamic of that order becomes available as well. So the, you know, our first sense, our immediate sense, is of a frozen kind of order. So here, you know, here I am in my room, and around me are all these things. But then the moment I think about, or the moment I kind of settle in, that's better, the moment I settle into my experience, it comes alive. And I realize that the order that I engage is itself a dynamic order by virtue of my being alive in it with other people. But we don't have to think about that right now. So that'll be the practice. Let me just see. Sudhi has made another comment here. She says, Rinpoche's last paragraph on page 61. So is that the one about the that ends up with the plane? Let's see. Yeah. So Rinpoche's last paragraph on page 61 reminded me of the time of meditations that I am attuned with what is presented by time. The speed of my life being presented matches the frequency of my receiving it and appreciating it. And the language that he describes it with is a traditional language that I'm familiar with, and I get it much easier. Okay, good. I think that the way you describe that is good. You know, it has to do with being in harmony with time. It has to do with being engaged with the, you know, being connected to the dynamic instead of trying to establish a world based on our own momentum. We'll have to work that out a little farther, but I hope that's clear enough. Okay, so I want to do the practice. So the practice is just to, let's say, to attune yourself to the dynamic that's inherent in the order, but to do that, you know, not by trying to look somewhere, I don't know, go somewhere and find the order, but whatever is happening right now, to see that as the manifestation of this underlying temporal order, which already has the dynamic of time inherent within it. So let's try that for about 5 minutes, okay? Okay. So, let's come together. And I invite your, as always, I invite your comments, observations, questions, reflections. Is there a kind of clarity about, or at least some sense of what it is that we're looking for here, or what the difference is between this and, let's call it, ordinary time or lower level time? Okay, Ron says, closer than close. And that's a good thing to say. It's not anything esoteric here, but there's a shift, and this is so much true in TSK generally, there's a shift that is not the kind of shift we thought it was going to be before we started. So one thing that I wanted to say about this was that the place that, you know, when you look in the temporal order and you say, well, what is there to be, you know, what can we say about this, the dynamic that is kind of frozen in the temporal order, how do we access it? It's very natural to access it in terms of our usual sense of past and present and future. Okay? Because those are manifestations of time, and that's where we know how to look for time. So lower level temporality is an aspect. Ordinary time is an aspect of what we're talking about. And that's a natural place to look. So then you ask the question, but so what's the difference? What's the difference between, let's say, the dynamic of time and the momentum that's part of the temporal order? So Sudhi says, it seems more about stripping layers of internal mental doings and more becoming attuned without all that cognitive business. Right. So, you know, in itself, of course, the cognitive is also an expression of the temporal order. In other words, all of our thoughts. But the very nature of thinking, and we've talked about this many times, the very nature of thinking is that it tends to take us out of the dynamic, you could say the dynamic of time, by creating our creating its own order, and then we're lost in that order, and then there's no possibility of discovering the dynamic of the underlying temporal order or the dynamic of the logos. Okay, well, I see that we don't have too many comments right now, so I can kind of conclude that it's a little difficult, a little more difficult. Okay, well, here come a couple. Thank you. I spoke too soon. So Eliana says, to connect to the aliveness of time, I have to bring an allowing quality, allow to be touched by time. I need to open the door connecting inside and outside. So that's a very interesting aspect. Okay. When the door is open, I can perceive a mixture of textures as a good perfume has a mixture of scents. That's very nice. Light, ease, easy maybe, and familiar. Okay, well, those are all very nice images. Allowing and being touched by time and connecting inside and outside and then perceiving a mixture. Those are all, it seems to me, very good pointers towards the possibility we're looking at here. John says, time's dynamic power is the body of the ocean and clock time. I'm not sure what ocean clock time I think I get. Oh, I see. Sorry. Time's dynamic power is the body of the ocean, and clock time and all manifestations are surface appearances. And I can experience both with a renewed distinction and sense of fluidity. Okay, that's good. So if you think about the dynamic or manifestations as being surface appearances. That would be like the waves of the ocean. And of course, it's true that the waves, we say, oh, there's the waves and then there's the depth, but the waves are the ocean too. You know, it's kind of an artificial distinction we make. So being able to experience both at once, that really is part of what we're looking at here. So that within ordinary appearance, we find this deeper, let's say, to go with John's image, this deeper dynamic of time. Ken says, might not access be found in entering the world of needs to be done, being in the world as a beckoning task to be done? Well, gee, that raises some really interesting, a really good example, it raises a really interesting set of questions. So on the one hand, you know, my first response to that is to say, yes, needs to be done is a dynamic, you know, the kind of urgency. And Rinpoche sometimes does talk about urgency and emergency. The urgency is a place where the dynamic of time shows up. So there's that level to look at. But then there's a second question that comes up for me, and Ken, maybe you have some thoughts about this. It seems that you could distinguish two different kinds of needs to be done, or two different kinds of urgency. You don't say urgency, you just say beckoning. So maybe that points in one direction. So there's two directions of it that strike me. One is the kind of urgency, or let's see how to say this. You know, there's an urgency that's linked to the momentum, like the self needs to have this, got to have it, that kind of urgency. Or there is a kind of beckoning, maybe your word points more in that direction. What does the situation ask of us? What is the right responsiveness? And so those are two very different approaches, actually, even though they're related to each other. Because if you think of the urgency of time, then that's a place where you can just touch the intensity, the urgency of you've got to have, got to do. But if you look at the possibility of responsiveness, that may be much closer to what Eliana's describing, a kind of an allowing, a letting go of the urgency that fuels our own needs and coming into contact with this beckoning. So they're quite different as I think about them. So it's actually, I think perhaps, Ken, you were just pointing toward the second one. Okay. Ron says, you gave me a good acronym for a daily time koan, Modin. Okay. Oh, momentum and dynamic. Got it. Distinguishing and remembering momentum from the dynamic. Yeah, that seems to be a really fundamental distinction here. And we've talked about it, so I'll move on. Alec? If Modine works for you or Monia, then great. Michael says, I'm like a spider weaving a thread of personal agendas, wishes, and attempts to strengthen an identity out of the energy of dynamic time, and then discover myself living in a web of my own making. Right, that's another nice description. That is exactly what happens in lower level time. The momentum is a part of it, but it's all very much related to personal agendas, wishes, attempts to strengthen identity. All of those kinds of urgencies, you could say, are, you know, they're still an expression of time, but they just kind of automatically cut us off from the underlying dynamic. That really is the point that you know, this distinction between momentum and dynamic is pointing towards too. And Ron refers back to Ken's, my little discussion or what Ken's comment inspired me to think about, urgency versus beckoning was the way I wound up saying it. Ron says an anxiety urgency versus an inspired urgency. Yeah, so inspiration is really, inspiration, of course, the word has to do with breathing in, right? And you could say if you can breathe in the dynamic of time, then that's inspiration. And Klaus says, it's pretty much related, being in the dynamic of time, the flow of time, that's this momentum type flow, I think, disappears. Flow can only appear to something positioned. Yeah, so there's a whole lot to explore about momentum and flow and position and conditioning, all of these different factors that have to do with our ordinary approach to time. And we think we know what we're talking about. When we say time, yeah, it's all of those things. And Rinpoche is really saying, well, those are all expressions of time in the same way that everything is an expression of time. But that's not what's fundamental about the dynamic of time. So, yes, I think we kind of touched on that a little last week, too, that in a certain sense you can say time stops. That's when you really touch the dynamic of time, when there's nowhere to go. That's from a meditative point of view, that's an expression that's used sometimes. You know, you settle down, you settle in, you find there's nowhere to go. The ordinary momentum fades out. And that's why meditation can be helpful here too. Okay. And Karin says, getting aware of different temporal orders of the other people in the room where I am just sitting. Also, in the chat room, right, that's where we are, we virtually are. Does everyone engage in a different order? Well, that's a wonderful question. To what extent, I just read something this morning that said, you know, it's time for us, given the way the world is today, it's more important for us to look at what brings us together as human beings rather than what separates us into individuals, but both are going on, and I'm not necessarily adopting that. It just reminded me of that. You know, it does seem as though, in some sense, we are separate from one another, and then in another sense, this whole notion that whatever temporal order we inhabit, and however it overlaps with other people's temporal orders. There is this kind of sameness of, you know, the fact that we all engage a temporal order. That sameness is there. So that's pretty fundamentally true. Okay, good. Well, we have a few minutes, and that's good, because I want to make a couple of points about the reading. You know, it's very rich reading. We've gone into some of the key elements already. But let me just say maybe generally something, and then I'll try to get specific and close with that. So the general point is that there is a whole other approach that Rinpoche, I think, is really exploring in the reading here. And that is that you could take apart the temporal order. You know, we've talked about loosening it through meditation, you know, slowing it down, letting the momentum settle into an inner calm, a more meditative approach. But you could also question the order. And I think that's what Rinpoche is doing a lot in this chapter. So he says, again, still on page 46 and what we already looked at, he uses the phrase, three lines from the bottom. He says, he talks about the unquestioned interplay of marking out all of the motions of the specific, as he says. So it's an unquestioned interplay. If you question it, then a different kind of knowledge becomes available. And I think that's what he's really doing a lot in the reading that we had for this week. And the one central point that I want to emphasize, it's in the reading, but I just want to kind of underline it, is it's very easy if you start to say there is this temporal order, there are all these meanings and labels that we apply, and we live in that world that has been set up in that way, and that's the frozen temporal order. It's very easy to think of that as a kind of subjectivity or idealism in a philosophical sense, where you say, well, reality is just something that we set up, something that we construct. And in the reading, Rinpoche is very careful to say that's not it. The problem with that way of thinking about it is that the whole distinction into subjective and objective is also already problematic, right? It's part of the problem. It's part of the dynamic. So if I say, well, I manufacture this temporal order, it goes a little bit toward Karin's question or point. If I manufacture it, then I'm saying, I'm accepting and affirming and underlining the distinction between subject and object, and that's part of the temporal order, so I haven't really gotten that far. Ron puts it this way. He says, it's not just a mental construct. And Joanna arrives. Yes, you can communicate, Joanna. We see your chat. So it's not just subjective. The order is deeper than that. Subject and object are given as part of it. And since Rinpoche goes into that in a very clear way, I think, I won't say more about it. And then he also, that seems to kind of naturally lead him into a discussion of language. And he gives the example of is, and again, I'm not going to go into that too much because, well, I'm not going to go into it. But as an example of how the way we make sense of the world, using a term, even as simple a term, but as fundamental a term as is, we are creating and again, you know, when I say we are creating, that's what I just said is not what's going on. It's very difficult to stay away from language like that. But there is a temporal order that's being created every time we speak, and it has to do with the structures that are inherent in language. So the word is, for instance, is just in a word that affirms a temporal order the moment you utter it. So there is a problem with using language because language always comes out of the temporal order and affirms the temporal order. But language also has something very powerful about it. And Rinpoche talks about that. There's a lovely paragraph that where he points to the power of language. And again, I think this has a lot to do with why he writes these books, you know. So the second full paragraph on page 51, he says, this does not mean that we should aim to leave words behind. For language is linked to a deeper knowing that can be a precious resource. Its power of analysis can challenge its own constructs and operation, opening to a more fundamental understanding. Its power of interpretation can point back toward its own origins, inviting inquiry into naming and knowing. Its power of creation can present alternative images and orders, countering the inertia of the presupposed. So again, this is one of these lists that Rinpoche gives us that you could really explore for a long time. There's the power of analysis, the power of interpretation, and the power of creation. Language offers all of those, and it would be an interesting exercise to take some chapter, let's say, in Knowledge of Time and Space and see how does he use the power of analysis, the power of interpretation, and the power of creation. And do they overlap, and do they support one another? Okay, Michael has a point which I'm going to defer for just a moment because I want to make one more point before we close, and then I'll turn to Michael's comment. I want to bring together some things. I think I'll write about this in the orientation. I want to bring together a few little clues that Rinpoche gives, it seems to me, in this chapter, because the question still and always is, how do we do this? You know, how do we turn away from the momentum of the presupposed, since that word just came up, how do we turn from the momentum of the presupposed to the dynamic of of time. Pulling together a few things that Rinpoche says, and I'll give the references in the transition and orientation. He talks about how we use language, whether we use it to make things more fixed and solid or to open things up, depends on our intention or the intention that we use. And then he also talks about appreciation, and he talks about inquiry. So there's a little triad there, a threefold. And I'll explore that in the orientation further, because the question really is, how can we activate this kind of inquiry? Now that we've really done something, it seems to me helpful in clarify what the dynamic of time is and is not about. How can we activate? So we did a practice, and we've been doing practices, and we've looked at various ways. But there is this further possibility that Rinpoche explores, and I'll say more about that. So now let me go to these closing points that people have brought up in the chat room or chat box. So Ron says, language is not the enemy, right? And Rinpoche is so clear about that here. You can use it for good or ill, because that's not quite the right TSK way to say it, but you know what I mean. And then Michael says, Michael says, following up on Karin's observation, so Karin asked, does everyone engage in or inhabit, you could say, a different order? So following up on Karin's observation, is it possible that we can see the order in a more flexible way through empathy with the experience of others? Yeah, I think that's a very nice suggestion. Might our dedication to our personal perspectives become more transparent? And somehow it seems relevant that he ends by saying, Joanna, I saw your remark. That's a kind of an empathy there, dealing with the difficulties of the computer realm. Yes, and I just can't help but say then that there's a whole, really most of the last chapter in the reading is about the possibility of developing empathy by looking at different cultures and at different times in history as a way of making our own personal perspective, but kind of cultural perspective, making that more transparent. That's a very interesting field of inquiry that Rinpoche suggests there, but just can't go further into that. And then Ken says, and I'm not quite sure which comment he's referring to, maybe it's language is not the enemy, I'm not sure. Ken says, look who's talking, and then offers, or look who is talking. Yes. He's referring to language, not the enemy. Okay, with that final yes, we will stop for today. Thank you. See you next week.